start anything today. I'm looking over at the screen at you in Philadelphia, and I'm call me crazy. I thought you were in quarantine, but is that a new shirt on Brad Dagger? What a dapper Dan!
It's actually an old shirt. I must not have worn it before. This is an older golf shirt, but I'm telling you, it just must be a good color. I look good in burgundy, I guess, because if you saw me stand up, I bought this shirt. I'm in that weird spot, Dave, that I'm a little bit between L and XL.
All right, okay, where is this going?
But sometimes I buy an XL shirt that's more X than L. And that's this shirt. It makes me look like I lost a lot of weight, even though I clearly haven't.
Oh my God.
It hangs on me.
Can I tell you, though, this is what it sounds like with you describing between L and XL. This is what it sounds like you at the counter. Excuse me, ma'am. I'm a little bit between an L and an XL, and this shirt has more X than L, and it's hanging on me. I'm a bit more of an XLL than an LXL.
There's got to be something in between XL and L, like kind of XL.
Yes. So
XL.
The specific area that you're talking about, the area between L and XL is one less bowl of ice cream every night. That's what that is.
Yeah, well, I'll just go up. You know what?
You either got to go up one bowl?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's going to be more economical just to go up a bowl.
Just go up a bowl rather than go down a bowl every week.
And enjoyable, too. I mean, think about the benefits. My clothes will fit better. I'll be happier.
You know what it is? It's just, for me, it's just seeing you in a button shirt, because I'm so used to as a t-shirt guy, I guess. That seeing you in a button shirt, I'm like, what are you going to church? What are you looking so fancy for?
Yeah, I guess I'm fancied up for you. And I took a shower this morning, too. So, I've gotten in that bad area with quarantine fashion here. Like yesterday, I didn't bother to take a shower because it's like, where the hell am I going?
Who I got to impress? I'm not the queen. Yeah.
What am I doing with all these showers?
Well, the other day, I get out of the shower and I put on cologne. And I'll be honest, Brad, I put it on for my wife.
Yeah.
And I'm downstairs making breakfast and she walks by and she goes, who are you going to see? What's going on? I'm like, I'm in quarantine.
This is for you.
This is for you. Where are you going? What's her name?
Had the absolute reverse effect that you were hoping
for.
You were hoping for Gomez Adams, where she starts kissing up your arm and saying, you know, you spoke French, or Dave, you smell French.
Yeah. Oh, you, between that and the bacon, I'm ready to go. Brad, I, frankly, also in the interest of my wife, I, the other week, started to grow a mustache. Because I figured, A, I'm not seeing anyone, right? Only my wife is seeing this.
Right.
So I thought, I'll grow a mustache. Because I've never, in all of my years, grown a mustache. I've always grown either a beard or a goatee, or maybe a Van Dyke. I've never grown just a mustache, right?
Yeah.
And so I start growing the mustache. But part of it is I'm going to give my wife a different man to have around the house, right?
Yeah.
Like, she's not stuck with Dave Kellett. She's stuck with Cary Grant, that kind of thing. And I start growing it, and I get on Beth and I, who's working remotely from home, obviously. Beth and I are doing a FaceTime the other day to talk about our work week. And she goes, what's with Mr. Mustache over here? What's with this? And I go, yeah, I thought it was going to be more Cary Grant. And she's like, yeah, it's more of a sad Tom Selleck.
Tom Selleck, though, is a really tough mustache to hit. He had very specific mustache.
Yeah, it had a little. Tom Selleck had a kind of a bushiness to it. I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but there
that's exactly right.
There was a thickness to it, a fullness to it. Whereas Cary Grant had more of a clean cut, like I'm going to sell you a suit kind of a mustache. You know?
Yeah. I was watching because we got Disney Plus. I was watching Three Men and a Baby, which kind of holds up and kind of doesn't.
Are there some anachronisms where you're like, ugh. Some gender politics that are like rough?
Exactly. Yeah. Where it's like, hey, you're a girl, you know how to take care of babies, and it's like, no, well, okay. Oh, yeah.
I'm a guy, I don't know what this thing is, holding a baby in his arms. Yeah.
Yeah, it was the 80s. We were all on cocaine. We had no idea what we were doing.
We were all on cocaine.
but the Selleck mustache was in full force there.
Yeah.
I've always been tempted to try to pull off the pencil thin mustache.
So I did that for a wedding because a friend of mine had a 1920s themed wedding a couple years back. And so I grew my beard out and then shaved the whole thing down to a pencil thin and then did a little eyeliner in the pencil thin to pop it out a little bit more.
Yeah, I'd have to eyeliner it up, I think.
And Brad, I got to tell you, and I'm not being egotistical about it because I rarely am. I look sharp with a pencil thin mustache.
Really?
I look like a $5 bill. I look great. That's really nice.
That seems as if it would take a lot of upkeep.
Oh yeah, yeah. You can't keep that going. But that was slick back hair. I was meant to live in the '20s, I think, and then be in the swing of twenties and not know that the thirties are coming. That's where I belong.
Yeah, that is the best way to live through the '20s is to die. Just, is to die about 1928.
Yeah, to like la la la. Gotta go, everybody. It's been a good run. Gotta go.
Just Great Gatsby it up and then get the hell out.
Great Gatsby it up and then take that Gatsby car of his, that super speeder that he had, just go off a cliff. Bye, everybody. I got a Thelma and Louise my way out of this.
It's been fun. Make sure you pay those bills.
I got to go. I'm just going to drink my last sarsaparilla and head off this cliff. And on that note, I'm going to say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics.
And making a living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the cartoonist of Evil Inc.
And I'm his friend Dave Kellett, mustache aficionado. Oh, that doesn't sound so good. Hold on. Cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's hour of comics advice is brought to you by our Patreon backers at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave, let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics, my friend. So we are now, God knows how many weeks into quarantine, doing the work.
It feels like month five.
Making it happen. It is weird, though, to think that the entire world is in part facing this. It is both wonderful, comforting, and also disturbing, but comforting in a small level to know that, like, it's weird to be Zooming with friends in London, and they're like, yeah, we're doing the same thing, and then to be Zooming with friends in Canada, and they're like, yep, we're on this, too. It's weird.
Yeah. It's like, we're all in this together. Nobody has, like, an upper hand.
No.
Everybody is in the same horrible position.
Yeah, it's weird how, you know, in the past, you could see certain, like, if it was the 1910s, 1920s, so you could see somebody making a move towards war because they're like, now's our chance.
Yeah,
but no country is like, this is the time. They're all like, oh, shit, how do we face this thing, you know? So anyway, I do want to say, though, before we get started in the show, this has been really comforting for me to talk the comics with you every week, Brad. So I want to say thank you as a friend. This has been really lovely. I have enjoyed our weekly check-in with Comic Lab, and I've enjoyed all the feedback from people at Patreon. As always, the comic boards, the Discord, the comments underneath each posted show, the reactions both to the show and the pro tip show that we do every week have been lovely. So I want to thank you all. It is really the kindness of what we can give each other that will carry us through this. So thank you all for being awesome. It's really been fun to see that community come together, and I love it. So
yeah, this has been a big help in keeping sane through a very insane time. It's just good to have certain things that you've got a common bond with other people, even though you may not have even met. That Comic Lab Discord server, somebody just posted a job posting in the Discord server, as a matter of fact. So it's that community is really coming together.
It's really lovely. And also I want to thank our sponsors for this week, our friends Wacom over at WACOM.com. And they're the makers of the new Wacom One that both Brad and I are using through this quarantine. And it is delightful. And Wacom has been awesome. It's worth having a look over at their site there. We had one Comic Lab reader tweet back to us or get back to us and be like, yeah, your advertisement didn't work for the Wacom One. And then immediately said, I ended up going with the Cintiq Pro. And it's like, all right, well, that's fun. I thought that was delightful.
Yeah, he ended up buying a Cintiq Pro 24, which, by the way, I've got at the studio and I miss it tremendously. But that is a heck of a piece of equipment. He really made a move there.
It is funny, though, because it's like saying, yeah, have you tried one of these new electric bikes? And it's like, nope, I bought a Tesla. It's like, all right, well, you got the Cintiq Pro. Anyway,
yeah, I couldn't figure out that bike. I bought a Lamborghini instead. Yeah,
exactly. So we do want to thank the Wacom, the makers of the Wacom One over at WACOM.com for sponsoring the show. And Bradley J. Geiger, what question you want to launch us into first this week?
I've got a really good one that I want to share with you right now. And it's from James Anderson on Patreon. And he says, what's the best platform for creating your comic? I'm starting a new comic and I don't even know where to start. He says, is Comics Press still a thing? What should I do? So I want to do a quick note there, because this is one of those things that not knowing the right words can make it harder for you to find your own information, okay?
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean. The terminology can trip you up, yeah.
Yeah, so when you say platform, that could be Twitter is a platform, Instagram is a platform, Webtoons and Tapastic are both platforms. Those are software that you might publish on, but also it might be any number of other things like Twitter and Facebook. What you're looking for and the words and the terminology you want to use in doing your own research on this topic is CMS, and that stands for Content Management System. All right. So what you're really looking for is a CMS, and you are right in saying that Comics Press and Comic Easel it may not be the best solution for you anymore, mainly because they've kind of failed to be updated throughout the recent changes on what we expect as web publishers. They haven't done a really good job of keeping up with the times. I always used to be a very, very strong supporter of Comic Easel. And it just hasn't caught up. Do you agree?
Well, I was gonna ask you. Do you have any sense of why that is, or what might have happened? Were they driven by individuals, and the individuals kind of gave up the ghost, or were they a company that kind of went under, or what happened that they stopped updating?
So here's the problem that you face in almost all CMSs, and it's the reason I'm gonna talk about in a little bit. It's the reason that you should be willing to spend a little money on a CMS, because what happens is, let's say you go with a free CMS and it's done by some person that just wants to help comics, right? Mm-hmm. Eventually that person, if they're not making money on this thing, even if they initially never wanted to make money on it, if they're not making money on the thing, they're going to turn to other pursuits, either because they want to or because they have to.
Right, right.
A CMS is something you want the person to be making money on. Why? Because it keeps them involved in the project.
They've got financial skin in the game, and so they're going to keep going with it. Yeah.
Yeah. And to do a CMS for WordPress, WordPress is constantly updating. WordPress is constantly upgrading, changing its code, and that means everybody that does plugins and themes and CMS systems for WordPress have to be continually updating that. This is something you want to support financially for your own good.
Right.
And I think
what
happened, Comic Press, I think way back in the day, kind of stagnated, and I think our friend Ryan North was involved with that. He could probably tell us the full Monty on that. But Comic Easel came around and was kind of the replacement for that.
Wait, doesn't the full Monty mean showing your wiener? Isn't that what that foot means?
I couldn't think of a better.
Ryan to come on the show and show his wiener? Is that what you're saying?
Not necessarily full frontal, but you know, just. Something tasteful is what
you're listen, I've been in quarantine in weeks. I need this. I need this.
Listen, Ryan is so tall, full frontal is his kneecaps. But Comic Easel was my go-to for a long time, but it really wasn't doing a good job, in my opinion, of keeping up with being responsive. And responsiveness means is that when a desktop user comes to your site, they get the desktop version. Mm-hmm. And when a mobile user comes to your site, they get a version of your site that is tailor-made for a mobile phone. In this case, in my opinion, that means a vertical scroll similar to what you see on Webtoons.
Right, right. Okay, so let me ask you, now that you've very capably illustrated the fallbacks with some of those. What's the route that you would recommend? Or do you want me to start and then you can jump in? Well, how would you want to do that?
Well, here's the deal. I want to be fair for Comic Easel. There is a workaround, but every time it's been explained to me, it has like 12 steps. It involves me loading yet another plugin on my site.
Step four, go hunt a werewolf. Once you have the heart of a werewolf, then bring that to the ancient king. He'll give you the code that'll make the plugin work. And you're like, God.
It was one of those things that was like, I'm not going to do that every time I have to update my site. I want this to be hard coded into my CMS. I want it to be automatic. I don't want all of this. So I actually went through a lot, and you know, part of this because I've been talking about it on the show. But I first hired somebody that I knew when I worked in newspapers back in Akron. That didn't work out too well. Then I got another one of these deals, and Dave, you'll appreciate this. He was one of these people, really super nice, super, super nice, made all of his money on like one of these web properties like Twitter or Tumblr. He was in on the ground floor of that and helped to code it, made enough money that he doesn't have to work anymore. But he's really good at coding. And he offered to help. The problem with that is since you're not paying the person, how do you keep coming to that person over and over and over again saying, now change this, now change that, now change that? Yeah. Eventually, they're going to get disinterested. And also, not that he ever turned disinterested, but I just felt way too awkward asking him to do the amount of work that I was asking him to do without any pay being involved.
Right.
Because again, even in the best case scenario of this, I get the CMS out. The first WordPress update comes through, and he's like, "Nah, I'm off in the Caymans fishing. You know, I can't, I can't do this right now." So it was like not a great situation. So I finally found somebody who was a WordPress engineer and understood what I was talking about, and he had come up with a version that was close. And I said, I'll work with you and tell you exactly what this needs to be, because there's a lot of stuff that needs to be included in a CMS. And we also have to talk about things like Patreon integration and rethinking how you're presenting that on the web completely from scratch. In other words, what you see on most everybody's webcomic site, in my opinion, is not the way to go anymore. We're in a different web publishing atmosphere. And what we see as a webcomic site has to change. Yeah. He got all of that. And so so he ended up creating and making changes to his WordPress CMS. It's called Toocheka, T-O-O-C-H-E-K-E, Toocheka. And it does exactly what I'm talking about. If a desktop user comes, they get the traditional either comic strip or comics page or whatever. They get one big image that their big screen can handle. If they come to your site on a mobile device, it instantly just gives them the vertical scroll version.
Right.
When you're uploading your comic, you upload the images for both of those at the same time. He had actually tried to come up with some way where it gauged your gutters and did it automatically. And I'm like, no. I want to control that. I want to
because sometimes a lot of that is really subjective. Yeah.
And I want it to be done right. So I don't mind going through because let's face it, every time I'm processing one of my comics, I'm dicing and slicing that up into panels anyway, because that's how I'm presenting it on Patreon. That's how I'm mirroring it on Webtoons. That's how I'm doing it on Instagram. I'm going to be breaking that thing down into panels anyway. This is just one more place that I'm going to be using that.
Right.
He got all of that. So that is my recommendation. You should check out Toocheka, T-O-O-C-H-E-K-E, and give it a shot for that and a number of other reasons.
Okay, so that's great. I have not done and I'm not planning to do an update right now. I have to defer to Brad because he's been in the trenches on this for months. But I will say this: I would like to speak to a slightly different kind of listener right now, because there are those amongst the Comic Lab crowd who are they enjoy comics. They love comics. And now, especially in quarantine, they've been thinking about jumping into comics. Mm-hmm. And one thing I want to speak to for those kind of people is that there is a step before the step that Brad's been talking about. And that is, it's very easy to get lost in the weeds with web development and go, I'm not even cartooning. I'm not enjoying this. And I'm not. So before we would do that, the step that Brad and I always advise is buy your URL, whatever it is. Like it's mycomic.com, right? Whatever it's going to be. Buy that URL and redirect it towards some form of a platform, as Brad said, like a Twitter or a Facebook, wherever you're going to be putting your comics up. And just keep posting that, but always make sure that you post with the URL that you've purchased. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So that when the time comes and you're ready to do the step that Brad just talked about capably there, then your URL is ready to go for that site. So anyway, what I'm saying is there's a step before this that's okay too, where you know you want to be cartooning. You want to be focusing on like, am I enjoying the craft of cartooning and the art of cartooning? Yes, great, good. Okay, now I'm ready to design and get a CMS system going. But make sure you have the URL, make sure you're posting at a consistent place so that people can go there. And then when you're ready to pull the trigger, you have the URL redirect ready to go. And then you go into one of the Brad, CMS systems that he talked about. Right. Don't you think Brad?
Yeah, I would definitely start with social media. I would start with the easiest way that you can get your stuff out on the web, like Twitter, Instagram.
Yeah, because enjoy it first. Don't you think that's the first, like, enjoy the craft of cartooning and getting things out into the world first, right?
Yes.
That's important. Because if you start learning a bike and the first thing you have to learn is how to rechain a bike every time it falls off, you're like, I don't want to ride a bike. This is annoying. Yeah. I got to fix this damn chain every time. Like, but if your first experience with riding a bike is, wee, look at me going down the road. This is fun. Oh, I think I can do this. That encourages you to keep going is what I'm saying. So, For the kind of people that are in the spot where you're contemplating starting, remember that there is a lower bar to entry than having to figure out a CMS system right off the bat.
Yeah.
And then on a separate note, I want to say no one can see this at home, but Brad and I, because we now use a new podcasting platform, we can see one another as we podcast, right? There is a camera on Brad, but because he's in quarantine, he doesn't have his normal podcasting setup like he had in the studio. So he literally has a blanket, but it's a blanket that is like the most floppy Joe blanket in the world. So Brad is doing this Jerry Lewis type thing where every 3 seconds, one of his arms is going up to lift up the blanket and, oh God, the blanket is coming back down again. No one. And it's like watching Lucille Ball trying to get all the chocolates as they go by on the platform. Brad's like, the blanket falling down. Blanket keeps falling. So Brad's making this serious point about CMS, but the visual that no one else is seeing that I'm seeing is that, like, imagine a guy narrating a BBC documentary about animals and going, and we see the tiger is having trouble. But then that narrator is also trying to poke up this blanket going, habba, 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 habba. Blanket, the blanket.
And I can see me on the screen and it keeps going in front of my eyes. So then I can't see anything and I can see what you're seeing and it's ridiculous.
That is ridiculous. He's literally doing it right now.
And it's just driving me crazy. Well,
we've got to figure out some system to prop up this blanket for. Do you have anything at home, like brooms we could use?
I'll tell you exactly what's going on. I tried something different because this hasn't happened in the past. And see, right over there is a little TV that I've also got on the desk so that I can have stuff playing in the background while I'm working. Okay. But this time I put the microphone on the right and put the laptop on the left because I thought it would be easier.
Okay.
But see what needs to happen is I've got to switch them back because if I put it just so it slopes down from the TV to my head, then I can keep it right. But right now the slope, see over here. But the slope is in the wrong area, so I just got to switch it back.
All I know is no one's getting this, but I'm getting the most excellent prop comedy show I've ever experienced. This is great. It's like Brad's doing a Gallagher show just for me. It's like, the blanket, we're having a lot of trouble with the blanket.
And you didn't even have to bring your tarp.
the first three rows.
I actually went to a Gallagher concert once.
You told me, though, that there was Gallagher sold his act to his brother. Remember? I think you mentioned this on a past show.
There was Gallagher and Gallagher 2.
Yeah. Don't you love Gallagher 2? Come see Gallagher 2. You know, that whole ad campaign was brilliant. Oh, my God. The balls on those people to pull that trick. That's amazing. All right, well, let's move into our next topic, Brad, now that you're knee deep in prop comedy over here. This is amazing. So I wanted to read a question that has been on the burner here for a while. This comes in from our patreon.com/comiclab backer, Sarah Frisk. And Sarah writes, team question asker here. Love the show. It is always a delight to listen to. Thank you, Sarah, by the way. You've always been very kind over on the Discord server and in the comments on Patreon. So we thank you. Sarah writes, I was wondering if you have any advice on maintaining boundaries with readers online. Oh boy, I'm ready for this one. Specifically when it moves from the occasional comment on a public post to sending private messages a few times a week, oh God, to your professional accounts that have a tendency of drifting away from talking about the comic, to talking about their life, hobbies, etc. Oh God, Sarah, bail out, yeah, this is terrible. Yeah. Most of the time, these people have been harmless and just seem like they want to geek about their interests with someone, and my approach has been be polite, be friendly, but don't ask questions that would encourage more discussion, right? That's a good thought. Because of the asynchronous nature of messaging online, the in-person trick with booth particles of going, well, it was nice talking to you, I hope you enjoy your Comic-Con doesn't seem to quite work in the digital sphere and the parasocial relationships. Dang, good word, parasocial relationships that can occur when you're creating something online. How do you maintain boundaries without necessarily alienating a fan? First of all, Sarah, I love it when someone reveals themselves with the diction that they have, the word choice that they have. And my God, I hope you're enjoying your doctorate because using the word parasocial relationships, what a great, Sarah has revealed herself to be a very smart person. That's nice. All right. So, Brad, this is a great question. And we, 20 years deep into our career, have met this person in the physical space. We've met this person on email. We've met this person in forums and on Twitter and everywhere. So, Brad Geiger, while you're currently trying to balance up that blanket on your head, how would you recommend that Sarah and all of us deal with email barnacles, comment barnacles, booth barnacles? Give us some background into what this person is, who they are. I have a keyword that I would like to use, but my keyword is lonely. That's my keyword, right? That's the word. And also creepy. That also exists. There's two types of people, but lonely is the harmless one. Creepy is the one that you got to be a little more careful with.
Creepy is the one you got to look out for.
Go ahead and give us your thoughts about, I guess specifically in Sarah's case, email and comment drifting, where it gets a little too much. You know, it starts to be like, all right, let's slow it down, champ.
Yeah, in comments, it's easy just to let it filter to the bottom of the tank. But it gets a little bit more difficult when it's an email because comments don't always expect an answer. Like if you've got commenting activated on your website, which I actually kind of disabled.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or I don't suggest.
Right.
But emails, they expect a response. And so I use behavioral modification. I go right to psychology 101 for that.
Okay.
And I the first time somebody emails me, I will respond to them usually within a very short amount of time. And I will respond to the extent that I'm comfortable responding, right? I answer their questions, address their issues, what have you. If there's topics there that I don't want to go into, then I just kind of pretend like I didn't see that sentence.
Yeah.
I just politely ignore it, right? Now, when it becomes a thing that these emails are coming more and more frequently and the questions are getting more personal, that's when I start to give a long period of time between stimulus and response. Right?
Then
the stimulus is they send the email, and my response is them getting rewarded for that action with a response from me.
An immediate serotonin hit, basically, of like, oh, they responded. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'll start to let a couple days go before I respond. And then I'll usually start my response with, I'm so sorry it took me a while to respond to you. I'm really busy. I'm really excited about this new project I'm working on or what have you. But so I can't always respond to my emails as quickly as I'd like to. I address whatever's in their email to the extent that I feel comfortable, and I go on. Now, right. When this keeps happening, I let a longer and longer period of time drift between the email and the response. And I always mention, I'm sorry I couldn't answer you, but I've been very busy. And then respond to the stuff that you want to respond to. If somebody sends you something that's completely you don't want to respond to that, in my opinion, you don't even owe a response to that.
Yeah.
Somebody writes in and says something, sends an email that, by the way, this is what I always recommend for social media too. Somebody has a comment on social media that's snarky or shitty. Even if they say, they can say something completely snarky and then say, this isn't a snarky comment. By the way, that's not a magic word, saying the snarky thing that you said. When you say this isn't a snarky comment, it was still a snarky comment.
You know what that is? That's a version of I'm not racist, but, and you're like, oh, wait a minute, hold on. Yeah, don't continue that sentence. Don't continue that sentence.
I'm not racist. Yeah. So you don't owe that person a response.
Right.
You ignore that completely. And if the emails get to where they're impolite or just inappropriate, you don't owe that person a response at all. And then if it gets to that extent, I'm even a big fan of using that little application in Gmail. I use Gmail. I'm sure every email service has this, but I can just set it up so anytime an email from this particular person's email address comes in, it just goes straight to trash and I never see it.
That's why you don't respond to me.
Never responded to you. Never. This goes back way back to the Blank Label Comics days. You said that one thing. It pissed me off and I hold a grudge.
It's set it and forget it. And now I never have to hear from Dave Kellett.
Yeah.
So I want to jump in here. So I think let's back up for a second and talk about the relationship between artist and audience. And what's happening here is, you are putting out a comic that people are responding to, right? They love it. And in the meantime, you're also tweeting, you're blogging. But for you, it's all one-way communication, right? I'm putting this stuff out into the world. Here's a comic. Here's a blog post. Here's a Twitter photo I took. Here's a sketch I just did. Whatever it is that you're putting out there, right? But for a lot of people, and especially for folks who are a little bit lonelier, it is not a one-way form of communication. They're seeing it as a friendship that's being built, which, by the way, is what you want. It's a lovely thing where they're welcoming you into their life, which is a beautiful thing as an artist. But then for some percentage of people, some of whom don't have social cues or don't have the background socially to know the difference emotionally between a true friend and a friend that is just an entertainer online.
Yeah.
They start to reach out to you more and more because they're like, this Brad Geiger gets me. Oh, this Evil Inc. really speaks to me. Oh, Brad's tweets really speak to me, right? And then if Brad ever responds to a tweet, hey, thanks so much. Glad you're enjoying it. Then it's like it's a confirmation of that bias, right? They're like, my gosh, this is great. Brad's responding to me. He and I are getting along. He sees me. He's getting along. And then I keep going. I keep emailing Brad or I keep tweeting Brad. And then I would mirror the exact same advice Brad has. It's the slow diminution of the length of the responses that you have. So the first one is, okay, Brad, let's role play for a minute. Brad, be the emailer. You're emailing me, and I'm going to show you slowly over the course of a couple emails how I respond back. So the first one, Brad, go ahead. Send me the first email, Brad.
Dave, I just wanted to mention that I noticed that you had Sheldon with his glasses. But by this time, shouldn't he have a new glasses prescription? He should have a different eyeglass style. And I really think you should keep up with eyeglass fashion. And just a thought, not trying to be snarky, just want your comments.
Hey, Brad, thanks so much. Let's not make it Brad. That makes it weird. Hey, hey, Steve, thanks for your email. So glad you're reading the comic. You keep reading it. I'll keep making it. Have a great day. Thanks so much. Bye. All right. And then the next email comes in.
I really had a thought about not only eyeglass fashion, but Arthur. Shouldn't he at this point have a few gray duck feathers? He's been around for a long time. Just something I wanted to bounce off you. He really should be a little bit gray around the goose feathers at this point.
Now, 4 days go by. Hey, thanks so much. God, your energy is always so delightful. I'm so glad you're enjoying the comic, Dave. All right. And then the next one comes in.
You know, Dave, your art style is really good, but I think maybe you should find a different artist for Drive. I love Sheldon, but you're not the right artist for Drive.
3 weeks go by.
Tick, 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 tick.
Glad you're still reading, Dave.
Glad you're still four words.
And then you'll notice snark started to increase on that. And I might not have even responded to that in real life because there was snark on that one. And honestly, to Brad's point, both in on Twitter, in comments and an email, you do not owe a shitty comment any response. Just as a basic human level. If they're going to be a dick to you, even unknowingly, you do not have to respond to that. You do not owe that person individually anything.
Yeah.
It's a form of Brad's great comment of, you know, listen to your readership, but don't listen to your reader. If an individual reader is being a jerk, you do not owe them anything. And in fact, I have sometimes not responded to something and someone will come back to me, Brad. This has happened more than once. So I know this is a pattern. They'll come back to me like 2 years later and be like, hey, you probably don't remember me, but I said such and such 2 years ago, and I'm sorry about that. I was going through a bad time, or I was in a divorce, or I had just lost my job. This has happened more than once, Brad, and they apologize without any prompting, and they're like, I'm sorry I said that about Sheldon or Drive or whatever. And anyway, I'm glad you didn't take the bait, but go ahead. Yeah, you had thought,
Brad. That's the one you respond to immediately.
Yes. Oh, God, that would get a big response. Hey, we've all had a dark moment, and I'm glad the comics were there for you, and thanks so much for reading, and I'm glad you're in a happier space now. All my best to you, Dave. You know, that gets a much bigger response.
I know I joke about holding a grudge and everything, but that's one grudge you don't want to hold. That if somebody comes to you and in a moment of human kindness and says, you know what, I had this put on my mind, I was way off base. That person, you don't let them hang, you don't let them dangle. You respond that immediately and respond to it with kindness. You know, that takes a lot for someone to say that they were wrong and or just to admit anything like that. Again, speaking of things that are owed, that person didn't really owe you that. They can just kind of go off on their own way. But the fact that they're reaching out is meaningful. And you don't let that person dangle. That's one that you respond to quickly.
Right. And so where the thing we haven't touched on is where this starts to get creepy. And that's a totally different area. And frankly, I want to acknowledge that Brad and I are speaking from privilege on this. And so unfortunately, we don't have the best advice because we are two straight, white, older male cartoonists, and we all, both Brad and I, have friends that have gone through the ringer with creepy people. And it is the sad truth that I have not had to experience I have once or twice had to experience truly creepy people, but I don't know, it is one of the sad social truths of our life that as a guy, as a straight guy, as a straight white guy, as a straight white older guy, I can do stuff that and pull stuff to protect myself that other people can't, and it's unfair and it's shitty. So we might want to, Brad, with the future, although it sucks to have to put a female or like a guest on the show on the spot that way and talk about their experience, but it might be helpful for our audience to bring that in to talk about it because
we do have to put an asterisk there and say you're getting advice from people that just don't deal with this on a fraction of the scale.
Yeah.
That any woman, for example, would deal with.
Yeah.
I remember I've got a remarkably generous, kind following on Twitter. The first time I got an extremely negative response, like full of nastiness and acid, was I shared when I brought on one of my assistants and talked about her. And it was an immediate nastiness. And it's like, it caught me completely by surprise because, again, I never deal with that. And it's like, all of a sudden, these guys are making really, one person, I still remember this, created a Twitter account just to make a nasty comment.
God damn it, really?
Yeah, just create it. It was the only comment on the account. And by the way, it wasn't even very creative. It's like if he had a real sick burn, I could see taking the time to make a Twitter account. But it was kind of a, out of the shoebox kind of comment. It was just nothing. It was just nasty.
Yeah.
So, you as much as I believe in the stuff that I just shared, you might also want to get a few thoughts from people who aren't kind of easily blinded by their entitlement. like Dave and I, because we don't deal with half the stuff that a lot of people deal with.
Yeah, and if you're the type of person being like, well, that's not true, I'm sure guys have to deal with the same. It is not. I tell you, I say this as someone who has been in the public eye for 20 years.
Yeah.
What I deal with, what Brad deals with, is nothing compared to what our female fellow cartoonists do, our LGBTQ cartoonist friends have to deal with. You can name a group, frankly, and there is just shit that they have to deal with that we do not have to deal with, and it's unfair. Yeah. It sucks, and unfortunately, it means that I also don't have a great body of advice in terms of this. What I will say is, and this is in terms of creepers that are harassing online, but I will say this in general, going back to the more broad scope: cultivate kindness, and in doing so, people will learn. Again, this is not creepers. This is more just generalized commenters and emailers.
Yeah, yeah.
People will learn and they will see that Brad only responds to kindness. He doesn't respond to snarkiness. He doesn't take the bait. He doesn't give them back the dopamine hit of like, I got a response because I was a jerk. Therefore, I'm going to keep being a jerk.
Yeah.
If it's like a casino roulette, a casino pull, if you keep pulling and there's no response, then you're going to stop putting quarters in, right? And so if someone keeps throwing snark at Brad and there's no response, eventually they turn their attention to something else or somebody else online.
Yeah.
And it is, unfortunately, a survival strategy that kindness and putting your energy in responding to kindness is the way to go with a lot of this. Don't you think, Brad?
I think that's a great way to put it. Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute and stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, Brad and I are going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
Yeah, because, you know, when you do, you'll get hours and hours of podcasts that we've recorded just for backers.
And an exclusive Patreon post that go even deeper on the Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, no worries.
You can still support the show by rating us wherever you get podcasts.
Leave us a 5-star review and a few kind words.
And that, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
And now, let's talk comics.
Okay, Brad, our next question comes in from patreon.com/comiclab and says, hey, Brad and Dave, thank you for all the hours of knowledge. I have listened to your entire Comic Lab backlog since discovering it a few months ago. Wow, that's a lot at this point.
That's a lot of stuff.
Isn't that like over 100 hours of podcast at this point?
Oh, my God, easily. I think the last show I posted was episode 122. And if you think that each of the shows usually go over an hour, that's a lot of hours. That's least 122 hours. That's a lot of us
cool.
in your ear.
This comes in from Vince Vert, by the way. And Vince says, and now I'm looking forward to making my way through Pro Tips as a newly subscribed Patreon backer.
Nice.
Hey,
nice.
That's fantastic, Vince. So just a reminder to everybody at home, we have what I believe is well over 50 hours now, Brad,
of
Pro Tip, exclusive Pro Tip podcasts. That go out just to our Patreon backers every week. And what Pro Tips is it's a compact podcast that's just actionable items that you can use right away in either your art or your writing or your business. Basically, the making and selling of comics, as is Comic Lab. But Pro Tips is more like, here is 4 actionable things you can do this week.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Vince, I hope you enjoy those as you jump into them. Anyway, here's Vince's question. I use a pen name. Oh, dang it. Did I throw Vince under the bus?
Well, maybe Vince is the person's pen name.
Maybe Vince is the pen name. God, I hope. Vince, I apologize if I'm outing you somehow. Oh, geez, Louise. Now I feel terrible.
Wait a minute. He didn't say what his pen name was. You couldn't possibly out him.
That's true. Okay.
Right.
This is Brad
because
being
anybody
a pal
from the,
and trying to make me feel better about this.
Let's say Vince goes by the pen name Mr. Pussycat, right? Anybody on the outside of the web knows him by Mr. Pussycat and doesn't know him by this name.
That's true.
So there's no way they could make a connection, is what I'm saying.
Can we also take a minute? Why did you use the pen name Mr. Pussycat?
That's literally like, what do you call that? Word association? It was the first thing that came to mind was Mr. Pussycat. maybe it's a derivation of Mr. Peanut Butter from BoJack. I don't know where it came from.
That name is brilliant, Mr. Peanut Butter. Anyway, all right.
Yes, it is.
So Vince, oh God, I hope I didn't out you, Vince. I use a pen name. Do you know of any obstacles one might face navigating the business side of comics when they're using a nom de plume? Which name do you use to sign contracts? How about the already complicated task of doing taxes?
Yeah.
This is a great question because I don't know, Brad, in the 100 plus hours of podcast that we've ever tackled this one. I have a lot of thoughts about this. We should do the big caveat right up front to Vince and everybody. Brad and I are not lawyers and we are not CPAs. We are not accountants. But I think we could offer some pretty good beginner advice for using a nom de plume. And my thoughts I have. But, Brad, let's hear from you first. What are your thoughts about using a pen name in creating and selling your art?
I think the first thing that I'd want to do, and what something I have done for my own business, is set up a DBA. And that is called a doing business as. And what it does is basically sets up a fictitious name. In my case, it's Greystone Inn Comics. That you do business under. So anytime, anything, in other words, somebody can write me a check to Greystone Inn Comics and my bank will cash it because I've filed my DBA with my bank.
And just to clarify with the public, so because I used to have a DBA as well, and what you do is you usually go to your local municipality.
Yeah.
If it's a city, you usually file it there. If you happen to work in an incorporated county rather than a city, you would file it with the county. And then what they usually do is they say, okay, you've got the paperwork in, we've taken your $40 for your DBA.
Yep.
Now you have to publish it for 3 weeks in a row or something in a local newspaper or business publication. And they will give you a list of approved publications. And that basically is to say to the public, hey, I, Brad Geiger, am now going to be Greystone Inn Comics, right, Brad?
Right, right. Yeah. And I'll be honest with you. I had to like redo mine just recently. That time that I got fished in by that banking phishing scheme on Labor Day weekend.
I forgot about that.
That made me have to redo everything that I had done. And at least in Pennsylvania, there was no such thing where I had to, file it in newspapers and stuff like that.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
No, I didn't. Maybe but that's that might be an old thing. Because let's face it, you could put something in the newspaper right now, and it's a great place to keep a secret.
I know. Well, maybe I wonder if it's because I'm in a Western state, and I'm not joking about this. I wonder if it's because, like, you know, in the Western states, all these rules got established with, like, gold. There's gold in them there hills, right? And so now it's like, if you're starting a business, you got to put it in a newspaper, mister. Welcome to California in 1849. Even as I did it, even as I filed my DBA, and this was a few years back, it felt so anachronistic that it had to go in a newspaper. It felt weird that was the point of public communication. Like, oh, great, my grandmother will know I have a DBA and no one that I do business with will ever see this, you know?
Exactly. But now, in terms of copyright, you can look up at copyright.gov and they've got, and I'll try to remember to post it with the Patreon post here. They've got a paper just on pseudonyms. So you can use your pseudonym in your copyright. In other words, your copyright can be, you know, the C with a circle around it, 2020, Mr. Pussycat, you know.
Stop
all
saying
rights
Mr.
Reserves.
Pussycat. I don't like that one.
What do you want for instead?
All right, fine. We'll use Mr. Pussycat. I just don't love it. I don't love it. You know why? I always feel like.
I love the things that catch you in a weird way. This is interesting. This is a look into your mind as well.
Yeah, this is definitely triggering me as I don't know why, but. Mr. Pussycat feels like one of those now would be considered. What was that Hanna-Barbera cartoon character who was so clearly gay, but it was the 50s?
Oh, Snagglepuss.
Snagglepuss, yeah. It just feels like a
stage left, even.
To me, the name Mr. Pussycat just feels like a super problematic cartoon character from the 50s that you're like, oh, hi, I'm Mr. Pussycat. Hello, everyone. Nice to see you.
Yeah, where you just immediately start cringing.
Oh, God, oh, God, it's 2020. Don't put this on the air anymore.
All right, so you can use your pseudonym in a copyright. So yours would be the C with a circle around it, 2020, right. Mr. Snagglepuss, all rights reserved, etc. Snagglepuss is better. That didn't seem to make you upset at all.
No, it didn't. But not a lawyer, even close to a lawyer. But I would say this. My spidey sense would be that probably has to be used consistently, as is true with a lot of copyright notifications. Like, mm-hmm. Notification copyright in the U.S. There is a copyright immediately signed legally at point of creation. Before you've even posted the copyright notice, if I draw something, there is technically a level of copyright applied to that, even at the point of creation. Then in the public declaration of copyright, as I print it or post it somewhere, if I put copyright Dave Kellett 2020, all rights reserved, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's a second layer of copyright. And then the third layer of copyright, if I have my facts right, and I think I do, would be the official filing of a copyright.
Right.
If you have something very specific that you wanted to have on record, by God, copyright, I'm filing with the Copyright Office, and I believe it's somewhere in the $75 to $150 range, somewhere like that, to file a copyright. Now, I've known cartoonists that incorrectly thought that they had to file every comic strip that they created with the Copyright Office. That's not the case. There's obviously those first two levels of copyright protection. And it's implied when you create a Sheldon comic strip that that's extended to the entire Sheldonverse, if that makes sense.
Yep.
I think most lawsuits would allow for that. But Brad, go ahead. You had a thought?
No, you've got it right on the head. And I wanted to take this moment to extend, because there's still some people that believe it. We need to say, when we're talking about copyright, there is no such thing as poor man's copyright.
The dumb thing about mailing it to yourself?
Yeah, urban legend that if you put it inside of an envelope and mail it to yourself and don't open the envelope, then you've got proof that this was yours. There's no such thing. It does not exist. Please don't fall for that. It doesn't even stand up to common sense. It'd be like you could use it once.
Yeah.
And if you had another follow-up suit, you wouldn't be able to magically open that letter again. You know?
I always imagine, like, what is the final outcome? Your Honor, I stand before the court with an unopened letter. I shall now use the letter opener, Your Honor. And I pull from the envelope the copyright in question. Like, it feels like such a weird reveal in a court case. Like,
the cameras. Yeah, camera spins around to the judge. She's hitting the gavel. I'll allow it.
I will allow it. We all know poor man's copyright works. It also feels like a weird thing taken from a hostage movie. Like, Brad's holding up a photo with a newspaper from today. He clearly is a hostage, you know? I don't know why it always triggered that for me. Anyway, a poor man's again, Brad and I, not copyright lawyers. This is where getting Katie Lane on would be so great. We should have Katie Lane on again. I don't know if she'd be willing to come onto the show again, but Katie, a wonderful lawyer up in Oregon, friend of the show, and a delightful helper of all sorts of cartoonists from all sorts of stripes.
Yeah.
She's not currently taking work, I don't think, at the moment. She's at workmadeforhire.net, I believe.
Which is a great resource.
Great resource. A lot of good blog posts. Probably better elucidating on this than Brad and I are doing right now. So definitely go check that out. But so from a legal standpoint, like if you're Lady Gaga, you can claim copyright on your newest album as Lady Gaga, right? Mm-hmm. So now let's talk about income. Again, not a CPA, but Brad, my spidey sense would be no matter how you made your money as Brad Geiger, under what nom de plume or under what auspices, the IRS is going to be like, so you made $40,000? Okay, we're taxing $40,000. Yeah. Like, they don't care that it was like Mr. Funny Pants that, there, let's use that one, Mr. Funny Pants. Maybe that's worse. I don't know.
Wait a minute. How are you not bothered by Mr. Funny Pants, but Mr. Pussycat sets you off? Mr. Funny Pants is that guy over in the white van dangling lollipops out the window. Mr. Funny Pants? Honest to God?
Right. How do we not come up with a better... What's a good nom de plume?
I never used one, so I don't know. I could never come up with a good one. The closest I was going to do was Uncle Brad, and that's creepy as hell.
Oh, that's creepy as hell. Yeah. What's the one? Do you remember the comic strip? It wasn't a comic strip. It was a series of children's books called like Mr. Happy, Mr. Smile, Mr. Friendly. Oh God, no! All those sound creepy too. Damn it! You can't use those.
I think we got it. We got to throw away all the misters and throw away all the uncles and just come up with a name like Stargazer.
Yeah, Stargazer. There's our God bless it. It took 10 minutes for us to find a non creepy comic.
And you know what that's from, right? That was Commander. That was Jean-Luc Picard's first starship. Was the Stargazer?
Was it?
How much of a nerd am I when he was in stellar cartography?
Didn't the Stargazer have four nacelles?
I don't know.
Someone's going to correct me. So speaking of the Comic Lab community, someone's going to be like, I believe it had 3.5 nacelles, and the fourth was a test nacelle that was not to...
but the anyway, reason, going back to taxes, the reason that is because the taxes are going to be cued into either your Social Security number or your employer identification number. And right, if you really want to set up another layer between you and this pseudonymous kind of person or entity, along with the DBA, you can file an employer identification number, which works just like a Social Security number, except it doesn't point to you. It points to this entity that you've created.
In fact, there's a lot of wisdom to that if you're doing a lot of freelance work and you don't really love the idea of sending your Social Security number out to the world. But getting a fine, a federal employment ID number, FEIN, is a smart thing to do. And another layer that I will recommend, not recommend, but for many years down the road when you're starting to accrue a certain amount of income and you're like, all right, I would like to get past the DBA, is once you... or at a level with the IRS where you're like, I have a limitation on the write-offs I can take, or I need to be able to employ other people, and I'd like to have a little bit more of a structure and a separation of liability for me versus my art. You can also set up with the IRS a corporation. In my case, I have an S-Corp, which is a pass-through corporation, and in my case, it's Small Fish Studios. And that is the entity that people do business with, right? And Small Fish Studios pays me a payroll to be an employee. I just happen to be a shareholder in it as well. But anyway, that is also a formal state legal filing that my corporation is now an entity. It shouldn't be, but it is now an entity. I say it shouldn't because the Supreme Court case that makes corporations almost people. It's weird. That's a whole separate filing, but that's not something you need to worry about now down the road. That I'm just saying, like, it's different than if you think that your pen name is its own entity. It is not. Right, a corporation is its own entity. A pen name is just a skein between you and the public, and the IRS will just look right past that and say, no, you are Brad Geiger. We will tax you, not Stargazer.
Right.
And so anyway, so there's that. Now, the third angle, we've looked at legal, we've looked at financing. The third angle I would think would be marketing.
Yeah.
And here's where it gets a little weirder, right? So I can imagine for 1,000 reasons why you would want to have a pen name, whether it's either for safety, it's either for the creativity that sometimes removing yourself from the process publicly allows for. I get that too.
Privacy.
There's also 1,000 reasons more that I'm not even thinking of that would cause a good pen name to be put to use. And I validate all of those. They're all good reasons. But here's where it gets weird. Let's say 5 years from now, you want to do a comic convention under that pen name.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Brad sets up a table as Stargazer, and I walk over and I go, that looks like Brad Geiger. Wait, Brad Geiger is Stargazer? So what I'm getting at is, if you ever have the intention of doing public appearances, it gets weird real quick. It all kind of falls apart real quick because people, the internet is smarter than you think, and photos will get passed around and people will be like, well, no, Stargazer is just Brad Geiger. Look, here's Brad Geiger. Here's a photo of Stargazer signing.
I just post a third picture. Here's Benedict Cumberbatch. Now try to tell the difference between the three of them.
And it's virtually indistinguishable. You can't. It's the same ripped abs. It's all you can't tell the difference. Brad is indistinguishable. So anyway, what I'm getting at is marketing. I can foresee down the road it gets a little tricky when you want to do either a book signing at a bookstore or a gallery, or you want to do a convention signing at a comics convention, that kind of thing. But sometimes the pen name allows for income that wouldn't be possible under your name for either, like I said, reasons of either safety or personal expression or 1,000 reasons why you couldn't create under your name. So I get it that sometimes the trade-off is, no, I can't do comics conventions, but I can still do Patreon. I can still do Kickstarter. I can still do my website. I can still do Twitter under a pen name. I get it. So again, it's a smart idea. You just might be limiting some physical appearances in your marketing. Brad, thoughts about marketing?
No, I agree. It makes it a little bit dicey. And if you're really doing it for a privacy issue, then you've got to know that going in, that the first time you make a public appearance, that privacy goes out the window. But I could see reasons you want to do it. And then again, download that form that the Copyright Office has that specifically. In fact, if like Dave was saying, you can pay money to file your copyright. that has a place right on the forum that asks if this is a pen name, if this is a pseudonym.
Right, right.
So they're used to dealing with pen names and pseudonyms at the Copyright Office. You really don't have to worry about it. But do download that page that they've put out that explains their position on all of it. Mm-hmm. Do get a DBA. Consider an EIN. And if you really get serious, like Dave says, consider that walk-through or pass-through corporation angle. But yeah, there's lots of stuff you can do. Go ahead.
I should put this caveat though. The DBA is depending on the state, $25 to $150, right? And is no big deal.
Oh, it was like $40, yeah.
Right, and then it's all it is a separate checking account at a bank. Not a big deal. Yeah. I would wave you off of a corporation unless you're really bringing in a big chunk of income,
right,
because corporate filings are in the hundreds, sometimes into the thousands with the state annually, yeah, not a one time like a DBA. It's annually. Right. And then you also have to prepare a separate set of taxes and keep a separate set of books. So both in terms of time and accountancy and expense, it is much more expensive than you think to keep a corporation going. So don't do it unless your accountant says, hey, it's time for us to set you up with a corporation for tax reasons. Right.
Yeah. That's advice you want to get straight from your accountant and not from these two guys.
Yeah, exactly. And again, both on the legal front and on the accountancy front, we are not lawyers. We're not accountancies. We're passing along the best that we can do. But you might want to consult with a local IP attorney or with your local CPA if you have specific questions for your tax administration in your region. And by the way, we're speaking from an American-centric angle here. A Canadian, Western Europe, Australian, Southeast Asia, most democracies – at least they do operate under a copyright pact, mm-hmm, which encompasses most Western democracies, and most of them have similar structures, but they're not identical. And obviously, the tax systems can be very different country to country, and the legalities of this or that region. So, take our advice with a big grain of salt if you're outside of the U.S.
So, Dave, our next question comes from our Patreon backer, Christopher Cassino. And Christopher says, hi there, Dave and Brad. For someone just starting out in webcomics, but with some experience in art, what hardware and software would you recommend for use in regularly creating and updating a webcomic? So we kind of shy away from this every now and again, Dave, because I think both of us have the attitude that anything that you can use to make an image, any way you can post it is good. Right. There's a very low bar for participation in webcomics. It can take place in a number of different ways. But let's say if we were really taking somebody and setting them up and trying to give them kind of the best push we can, what would your dream scenario be for that person?
Okay. So, tools and software and systems to help create a webcomic.
Yeah, like
this is purely in the creation.
Software.
Hardware and software. Yeah. Okay. So I want to start from even a step back hardware and software wise. For fiddling around for sketches, use any pen, crayon, pencil that makes you happy, right?
Yeah.
Just get the mark making on a page. It's no big deal. Use whatever you want. If you ever think that the art that you're about to begin is something you would like to sell or eBay or mm-hmm. make a Kickstarter reward down the road, I would set two bits of advice. One, try to use an acid-free paper.
Yep.
Acid-free paper just diminishes the amount of decay that it will experience over the decades to come. So you will be selling a piece of paper that will last, right? So acid-free paper.
Right.
The other thing I would use is a light, fast, archival quality ink.
Yes.
That can be had both in inkwells and in pens like the Micron Pigma or in the Pitt Faber-Castell pen, or rather Faber-Castell Pitt pens. Archival quality, light, fast ink. That way, if you ever go to sell it, you have the peace of mind knowing that they're not going to come back to you 5 years later and be like, it's faded and it fell apart. What happened?
Right,
that kind of thing.
Right.
So there's that. But again, if you're just fiddling around, any piece of paper, any pencil, any crayon, any pen will do, right? And then secondly, when you're starting to work into digital things, the couple of pieces of equipment around a studio I would recommend are scanners. When Brad and I were starting out, a good scanner was really expensive.
Yeah.
And again, this is only if you're going to create a physical object and then scan it in to work on it digitally. We'll talk about pure digital in a minute.
Yeah.
But boy, have scanners come down in price. And you can get an 8.5 by 11 scanner for literally, it's like the cost of a toaster now. It's nothing.
Yeah.
And a pretty good quality one, too. So that's good. If you're going to draw out a bigger size, There are certain Epson all-in-one printers, like the 3-in-1s that do fax, scan, and print. So you get a whole thing for your studio for like $200.
Right.
And they do 11 by 17. And that can be chef's kiss.
Yes.
That scanning bed. Like if you try to custom buy an 11 by 17 scanner, I don't know why. It's like $1,000, $1,500. And you're like, what the hell? And I use, just in case you were curious, an Epson Workforce WF7720. And I only mention that because I think it's a year or two old. You'll find whatever this year's model is.
Mm-hmm.
But that's that branch. Now, Brad, let's jump into computers and software. What do you want to jump in with?
Well, one thing I do want to mention, and this is a little bit of transition between ink and digital, is that let's say you got one of those 8.5 by 11 scanners and you're working, as you should, much, much bigger. And let's say you've got a 13-inch comic strip.
Yes.
You can scan that in pieces and then in Photoshop use a command called photo merge and it will automatically link those up. And it does an amazingly good
job. What?
This was a pro tip, Dave, from last year. And you were just
I forgot it again.
Wait, were just surprised. It's called photo merge. And you can take those pieces and it will, using pixels, it will link them up and it's dead on. It is dead on.
God,
it's amazing
that
the technology.
Okay, so I don't need it now. This is why I forgot it, because now I have this 11 by 17 scanner. But the early part of my career, Brad, I cannot tell you how many hours wasted at 1:30 in the morning trying to stitch together two scanned pieces of a comic strip.
And trying to eyeball them.
And eyeball, exactly. And be like 0.5 degrees, 0.6 degrees, 0.7 degrees, you know, trying to, Anyway, so
photo merge,
pass me is angry.
Yeah, photo merge is the command you're looking for. And if I do recommend, if you're going to do any kind of image manipulation, Photoshop really is the industry standard for that.
Yep.
And again, you know, you're going to have to subscribe to Adobe Creative Cloud, but I take that off on my taxes every year. You know, I just kind of grin and bear it. However,
I will say this, because Beth, who works with me in the studio, did let me know that right now, Creative Cloud, the full membership, is $20 off. So it's only $10 more than a single app to get all of Creative Cloud right now. They're not a sponsor, but I'm mentioning it just in case you're curious to jump in.
Well,
I think they did this for quarantine pricing.
Yeah.
So like Photoshop is X dollars. But for $10 more, you get all of Creative Cloud. So, but again, if you're just starting out, you kind of only need Photoshop. You don't need InDesign. You don't need Illustrator.
You're going to need InDesign when it comes time to design your book. But
book, but that's
you don't
a couple years down the road.
Stuff.
Yeah.
So yes, Photoshop I do recommend. But for actual drawing of comics, I've stopped using Photoshop years ago, and I switched to Clip Studio Paint, and that is hands down. Nothing can touch it, and it's very affordable, and they have sales on it all the time. If you're going to be drawing comics digitally, I would be so bold as to say you should be using Clip Studio Paint. It's untouchable.
I am dyed in the wool for Photoshop.
Yeah.
I very much admit that I'm too much the old man who can't change now.
Yeah.
Like I should be able to change, but this is one area where Brad has tried. God bless him. 1,000 other cartoonists have tried to get me to switch. And I just can't do it.
Yep.
And anyway, but I will say this. I actually believe, Brad, that if you are a younger cartoonist or a starting out cartoonist, that it is so hard to go against the word of dozens of pros who say this program is amazing.
Yeah.
And honest to God, if you wait for the right time of year, it's like $35, isn't it, Brad? That's for the whole platform.
Yeah. Yeah. You can get it for a song.
Yeah.
And they've got an EX version. This is one of those few cases where it's like it's not really necessary to get the bumped up version, the bigger version. There's very little difference between their standard version and the EX version. Go with the less expensive of the two. But in terms of how it reacts in digital, like on your Wacom, for example, the reaction is wonderful. The tools that it gives you. I've been able to draw better. I've been able to draw faster. I've been able to just up my game in tons of different ways using Clip Studio. So I strongly recommend Clip Studio Paint as a drawing tool.
Right. And I will say this for, and it's again, the caveat being that they are a sponsor, but, in the past, I might not have recommended, buying a big Cintiq if you were starting out, because, if you're a new hobbyist, if you're a pro-am or an amateur, the me recommending that you buy a $1,500 Cintiq was not fair, right? It's not the right way to go. It's like saying, oh, you're learning how to play piano? Well, go ahead and get a Steinway.
They're only, you're going to want a Steinway. They are
the best.
You're
going to want a Steinway. Don't get an electronic keyboard. Get a Steinway. And so, but now with that Wacom One being only like $400, I get it. I think that might be a good way to go. And I say that with the caveat that they are a sponsor, but frankly, I'm saying this in friendship. Yeah. That I might not have done it in the past for the big expensive ones, but now if you wanted to jump in digitally, that's kind of the way to go. Brad and I, as professionals, I always want to put quotes around that, but as Brad and I, as quotes professionals, Brad and I as pros are both drawing pro level work on, again, quotes around it, pro level work around it. Yeah. I always consider that somebody else like Jim Lee is the pro, and like in my mind it's still an imposter syndrome that I'm producing pro level work.
And you see Jim Lee just recoiling as you're calling yourself a pro.
Yeah, exactly. Jim Lee's like, why don't you sit down, my friend? Let's have a seat. Let Jim Lee talk.
Sit down, Scooter.
Sit down, Scooter. Anyway, so I think that takes us through the broad scope of what we would recommend.
Yeah.
Again, if you are just starting out, nothing wrong with the pencil pen and just fiddling until you feel comfortable. As you start to create work that you feel like, oh, this might have some staying power to it, move towards archival and acid-free supplies. And then for digital, I think Brad's on the right page that for $35, I mean, maybe it goes on more for $50 Clip Studio, right?
I think that time that I was over at your place, I bought it for like $50 just to have it at the studio. I bought it as low as $25 or $35.
Yeah, it gets really low. I think both Brad and I, even though I am not a user, I think we would both say that's the recommended, because price point. You can't beat that price point. And literally dozens of my favorite cartoonists in the world use it and love it, so I would recommend that. And then I think if you do want to go digital, that Wacom One, man, I have yet to find a bad word about it for that price point. So I think that rounds out the beginner package of what you might want to do. What do you think, Brad?
And then notice that we didn't say anything about publishing yet, right? Because that, and we talked about it at the top of the show, but I'll just reiterate, that is the least of your concerns at this point. You can post this thing on Twitter. You can post it on Instagram. It really doesn't matter. Later on, you're going to want your own website. You're going to want to cross all those other bridges. But to start out, just put it out somewhere. You see people all the time saying, the toughest thing about webcomics is getting your work out there. That's the easiest thing. Getting your work out there is the easiest thing. The hard thing is doing work that people want to interact with. But the easy thing is getting it out there. And that's all you, and truly that should be what you're focused on right now. Getting it out there it doesn't matter if you're taking the world by storm right now. You should just be working on getting your next comic out. That's your main thought.
Right. And then along those lines, I will say this is the time in your cartooning where you want to maintain the joy and the excitement of doing. And that's why we say just get started, because if you get bogged down too much in the website design or the technology needed, you can forget the joy of creating. But maybe I get where your question's coming from, because maybe you're a step or two past that. But the idea is to keep the excitement up, right? Keep drawing, keep doing. Don't get bogged down in the what pen does Brad use, what software does Brad use. Just whatever. If it's working for you and keeps you making the next page or the next comic strip, great. Yes. That's all you need. Just keep drawing at this point in the early part of your career. And as you go, you'll pick up this tidbit and that tidbit, especially listening to a great show. I like Comic Lab.
And that means you've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been my friend Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the cartoonist of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And my good friend Dave Kellett, co-director of Stripped and cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
And the Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode was edited by Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions over at www.woodsong.media. And of course, this show and all the recent shows have been sponsored by our good friends Wacom over at wacom.com, the makers of the new Wacom One, and we thank them.
If you love Comic Lab, you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, and you may even hear your review featured on a future episode.
And Comic Lab is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that twice. And in the voice that I use anytime someone rings my doorbell in quarantine, hey, get off my lawn. Get out of here. What are you doing? It's a quarantine. Don't ring my doorbell. patreon.com/comiclab.
that's a good one. I like that. That's kind of, you know what that reminds me of? See if this brings back any Saturday morning memories for you. Right. Solomon Grundy smash. I like how Solomon Grundy was able to make smash a two-syllable word. Solomon Grundy smash.
So my friend Drew Powell got to play Solomon Grundy on the most recent Batman show. Gotham. Jeez, I blanked on it. Sorry, Drew. But Drew got to play Solomon Grundy. And there was one time where Drew was over hanging out. And for my little one, he did Solomon Grundy. And Brad, the look on his face was like, mwah, chef's kiss. It was so good to be like, Drew's having a beer and he goes, hey, I'm Solomon Grundy. I was born on a Monday. Whatever the voice was, you know. What's the phrase that Solomon Grundy says?
Solomon Grundy was born on a Monday.
So he does the phrase and then just the look on the little one's face, Brad. Oh, my God. It was like... It was like as though I get to meet Bill Watterson. You know, it's like, oh, wow, Solomon Grundy's in my backyard.
Sitting right here.
So anyway.
That's a beautiful moment.
I'm going to start using that when someone rings my doorbell in quarantine. Solomon Grundy smash.
Solomon Grundy smash.
See if I can get a third syllable in there.
If anybody can do it, it's you.